I've never read Beyond Good and Evil. I just quote it all throughout the story.
I like that idea. Hey, guys.
Hey, guys. This is DJ... Geist!
DJ DeMorgans.
What'd I say like
and
that?
DJ Trismegistus.
Of the Hermetic Order.
Of the Mythic Dawn.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wait. Who's the Hermetic Order?
Their Hermetic Order is a London-based cult. Okay. Dedicated to Hermeticism.
Oh, and nice.
The Mythic Dawn is... from Skyrim.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, was you Skyrim kid? Does your girlfriend know about this?
We don't talk about this. Okay.
Don't expose him on air.
Was, yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. Yeah, bro. I'm over it, dude. Yeah, I'm over it.
I'm over it, bro.
It's just a phase. It's just a phase. Yeah.
Anyways, hey, guys. I'm DJ DeMorgans. This is Philosophy.
We think. I'm DJ Zagast.
You already said that.
I know. But, like, you know, there's, like, three different, like, there's like, three different Geist. There's Geist, Zagast, like, nation, like the nation spirit, and then like the there's like another spirit too.
I just pretend I've read Hegel.
Yeah, that's how I treat Nietzsche sometimes. I know what you're talking about, man.
Yeah, God's dead. Yeah.
Yeah, God's dead. God, dead.
We're a philosophy talk show, so if you have any philosophy questions tonight, we've got our own stuff we're going to be talking about, but we're always happy to answer your own questions. First and foremost, so yes. You can call us at
512-495-5879.
That is 512-495-5879. And one more time, it's 512-495-5879.
512-495-5879.
Okay. Wait, sorry, what was the number?
512-48. Oh, fuck. Oh, okay. 512.
Just give it up.
I can't do it. I was trying to sound like them people, like
512-495. Going once, going once,
10,000, 10,000, twice.
I got 10,000 there. I got 24,000 there. We got 24. I got 25, 25. I got 25. I got 25. 25 in the back. 25 with a man in the back. And everything. It's sold.
25 going once. Man with the blue shoes.
Anyways, we should probably do some philosophy.
Yeah. So what are we doing?
Well,
philosophy.
Oh, yeah, it's true. That's true.
Yeah, yeah. That's
what is philosophy? Okay.
Let's call it.
Oh, boys. Listen to our first episode. We tell you then.
Did we? Did we cover that?
Yeah, we did.
Oh, yeah, we did. By
we covered Russell.
Dude. No, but we covered a What Is Philosophy paper.
Oh, that's true, too.
From that really thick book.
Yeah, we covered that and then transition.
Who wrote that? Elliot something. Anyways.
Elliot Philosophy.
Elliot Philosophy. Yeah. That's it. Anyways, so tonight.
Since Statham, bro.
All right. You can't just be dropping, like, random stuff.
Okay.
No apparatus capture.
The listeners aren't going to understand.
Yeah. Sense and perception.
Geist.
Okay. Sense and certainty. Shit. It's a... The English, like, Pinkert has is perception and understanding, which makes more, like, I guess, clear. But anyway. Yeah.
Anyways, so tonight, what are we talking about? We're talking about our outlines for our term papers. If you've been following us this semester, you know that we've been doing a big semester on ethics because we're, well, all three of us are taking the same ethics course tonight. Usually it's just me and Geist, and we're taking the same ethics course, but so is DJ Trish.
And don't say that.
What?
It sounded like it could get you canceled.
Why?
I don't know.
Okay. Sounded fine to me.
Okay.
What? Does it sound like a slur?
Nah.
Okay. Moving on.
On today's episode of How to Gaslight.
Literally.
What did you just say?
Anyways, so we're talking about our outlines for our term papers in these ethics classes.
Yeah.
We'll spend the first half of the episode. Do you want to do me or you first, guys? All right. So we'll do me first. Geist is busy taking his B-reel.
There we go.
You gonna participate in this conversation or?
Yeah, I'm gonna go first, dude.
All right, figure it out as you go.
All right.
Yeah. So, what is a term paper exactly?
Term paper is a paper that you write at the end of the term.
Yeah, that's true. So, I'm covering but what's the Plutonic form of a term paper?
Dude, say what you're. Paper.
that was funny.
You know what I just realized I can do?
What?
I can take these and they still be on. I think if I do that, then they're still on the recording, but they're not on air.
Oh, that's good.
Sorry for that dead silence.
Yeah, sorry about that, guys.
Okay.
I just found out something that I can do.
That's pretty dope, actually. We're legends in the booth. Anyways, so my term paper, I want to say turn paper for some reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what my paper is going to be when I get to the conclusion. Hard turn.
What are you turning away from? Aristotelian
God.
Ethics?
No, God.
Oh,
God.
Okay.
Coming out the closet, I'm an atheist. I don't know.
I'll be like edgy, like Dawkins people.
Oh, yeah. That's good. No, so my paper's on.
I just feel like it's really stupid.
So my paper's on Malebranche and Aristotle. So Malebranche is this French guy that no one really cares about, but he got put in our class anyways.
Well, I think he's important to situate Hume.
Oh yeah, for Hume he was important. Yeah, but
and Hume's important. Ian proves.
Yeah, Lige said he shouldn't be in canon because he stole some. Indian philosophers stuff.
That's how it always goes, though. Imagine spending your entire life working on writing this stuff, and then 1,000 years down the line, people are like, oh, he's irrelevant.
Yeah.
He's just a gateway for understanding this other person.
Yeah.
I mean, he deserves it. Don't get me wrong, but like...
Yeah. So, Malebranche is this French guy. Malebranche, French. And he has this ethical... this show's gonna be chaos because this the so he has this he has a moral theory. And what is his moral theory, you might ask?
That's a good question.
Yeah, so someone asked that question, so I wasn't talking to myself.
What's Malebranche's moral theory?
That's
what's
a good
morals
question.
Yeah, we should say what are morals, I guess. What are ethics?
Oh yeah, ethics.
That's good.
What is? What does is mean? What is what?
Or like metaphysically or like normatively?
I don't understand these big
words. I want both.
I guess normatively it'd be like what is the right thing to do?
Yeah.
Metaphysically would be like what is good? Does good exist or something like that?
Yeah. This was more just to like mess with you, but yeah.
Oh, yeah, but I think I handled it well.
I thought you handled it well. Let's move on. What are Malebranche's specific ethics?
So God, this guy named God, Jehovah in the sky, plays an important role in his moral theory. So he wants to say the vision of God is represented in the moral duties.
Duty.
Yeah, and that is dictated by the perfections which are revealed from God's knowledge, and the perfections are that he has this pecking order of things that are like most like God.
And how does he determine what the pecking order is? Reason, right?
Reason, yeah.
Like so what is the most rational?
Yeah, what? Who has the? Yeah.
We should situate him. He's in Malebranche. I don't know if we did this, but he's in the
Yeah, like, he's a rationalist.
Lineage of rationalism.
Yeah, yeah, it's reason. So, like, angels have the most capacity for this reason or something like that.
Reason is king. Well, no, angels don't. God does.
Well, yeah, no, I'm talking about in the pecking order.
Right. So it would go God, and then it would go...
The angels. And then humans are the next thing down. It's God, angels, humans.
And I think he would just be... I think this might work well with Hume, but I think he may just be looking at observation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so much as you can observe this God and angel. Yeah. But looking at observation and saying, which of these creatures or things are most susceptible to the passions and which are the most susceptible to the following reason, strict, pure reason, and... If you think of it as a sliding scale, the higher that you have the dial of passions turned up, the lower on the pecking order you are. Or, in opposition, the higher that you have it turned up of reason, the higher you are.
Yes, yeah. The more reason you have, the more closer you are to God's image.
Yeah.
So, like, inanimate objects like a rock or this paper thing. This paper, what is this?
Notebook.
Notepad, anyways. set you up for failure. And then like, you know, he calls them creatures. But I don't know why he does that, dude. It's like the 17th. It's what, the 17th, 16th century. He could call them animals. That word existed, but like animals are like. So it's after humans, it's animals, and then it's the inanimate objects.
He was probably trying to group in other people into creatures.
He probably was
staple of the time.
Yeah, that's true.
Classic,
yeah. Dude. It's kind of cool to be grouped in with creatures, I feel like.
No,
like from like I think so as someone as that is. Oh, I'm neurodivergent, by the way. I just hate that. I feel like that should be stated from the jump. Actually, I think.
Right, to summarize, Malin Branch wrote a silly little fanfic about the Bible, where he talks about these little cool little imaginary beings and like his own emotional Catholic guilt repression.
Yeah.
Fun stuff.
He represses the phallus. so okay.
He's a Freudian, actually.
Malin Branch has like it. So in his pecking order, from the angels, they're closest to the image of God, and they have the higher capacity of reason than humans. They're the second closest thing to the image of the God, and they have a less capacity reason than angels, but have a higher capacity
than humans.
Well, no, humans have a less capacity than of reason compared to angels.
I thought we were talking about angels. Sorry.
Yeah, and then humans have a higher capacity of like to animals.
Yeah,
it is
this very capacity that defines the goodness for a thing. For
Malin Branch, you got to live in accordance with these perfections.
Yeah. Trying to become the most reasonable, the most rational that you can be, is the good for the soul, I guess, to use Aristotelian language. But
is good for the thing that thinks.
Yeah, I guess.
It means Cartesian.
Malin Branch a panpsychist? Because like, what about there's just some rocks laying out there, and they're like. I want to be rational, bro. they just look up at worms.
Well, Galen would say panpsychist or materialist.
Yeah. So, but they don't have to be.
They don't have to be.
No. I'm just saying, like, our little rock outside is looking up at the worm like, one day I'm going to be like you, bro. I'm striving to be rational.
rocks are at the bottom of the list. That's the only thing that makes sense because they can't be rational.
Well, if it's thinking, it wants to be rational. Oh, is that true. A rational decision, which means it's already rational?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he's looking down at that worm like, I superseded you, son. And then he's like, I'm Pickle Rick.
I'm Pickle Rick.
Anyways.
So like, if you live in accordance with these perfections, so God is just. And if you live in accordance with these perfections, he will grant you this happiness because he is just. But that follows.
No, but by necessity.
Yeah, by necessity.
Like
yeah.
You have to be happy if you live in accordance with these perfections because it's like some sort of innate principle in God that if these perfections are obtained, then happiness will sort of like flow or proceed from that.
So I put moral happiness for some reason, but it's probably not accurate. So to have this moral life for Mala Branch, you have to be in accordance with the perfection, and then from there you get this happiness. And that's by necessity. And also he wants to, we should make clear that he's a Catholic, so none of this is easy. It's like hard, suffering. You gotta like deny like having like, gotta deny gluttony.
Yes, right. Catholics, the famously extraordinarily happy people.
Yeah. So it's like,
wait, am I allowed to say that?
You can say it. You can say it.
No, can I go a little stronger?
No.
Okay, so we got 10 minutes here. Mm-hmm. So let's.
Yeah.
What's your critique, and then where are you going with the paper after that?
Okay. So I guess my critique is like. One of my critiques is like, it. He wants to say you have to be amped, like this process is not an easy process. It's like it's a hard process. It involves suffering. And my thing is like, what about if that's not the case? What about if you're just a modest, fella? You habituated the correct.
What if these perfections, like, why is suffering necessarily linked to these perfections?
Yeah.
I think Malebranche would just say because of our sinful human nature. Yeah. It's within human nature to resist these things.
But the thing is, what about if someone is just already modest? Like, this person is just modest, and he doesn't have these desires to, like, commit sins and stuff like that.
I think that Malebranche would say that person doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Yeah, he probably would, but that's stupid.
It is quite.
Yeah.
Or he would say he doesn't exist, or he would say that person's already living in accordance with the perfection, actually.
That sounds like a cop-out.
It is a cop-out,
I mean, his entire work is a cop-out. Silly little fanfic.
So like, why are we valuing why is the suffering linked to these perfections? And also, I just don't think it's pragmatic. I don't really have I don't know how I'm gonna successfully critique them. I think the first option is pretty good.
I think maybe you could go with something like the value of emotion when it comes to maybe living in accordance with, right? Like you could say, being perfectly reasonable. Really. That's getting at goodness. I mean, you could even go with like some Humean idea of like, no, you have to have emotion make moral decisions.
So I could say like maybe in a like, you have to have emotions, and in certain situations will cause you to act in the correct emotion. Like there's a situation that happens upon you, and there's a correct way to act, and there's a correct emotional response to that action.
Right.
And emotions are just like a part of that.
Right.
I just sounded like Aristotle.
No, yeah, I'm wondering, that's good. But, I'm wondering if there's, like, a way you could use his system.
Oh, his system.
To, like, take his system and be like, here's an example.
Yeah.
Of which you are acting in accordance with a perfection or whatever. And yet you still need the emotional response.
Mm-hmm.
You still need, like, reason isn't the only thing that's getting us to this perfection.
Oh, okay. Oh, I can see. I see your relation to Hume, where Hume says reason gets you towards the sentiments, but
reason can guide your moral judgment, but it can't guide your decision to perform a moral action.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Hume kind of wrote your story for you there.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, yeah. Because he is like responding to Malebranche, because he went to school in France or something like that.
Yeah. Well, he actually didn't go to school in France. He just went and
worked.
Chilled.
Yeah. Well, he kept on. He was getting denied. He got denied professorships.
And he got kicked out of Glasgow.
Yeah, based.
Because he was like, God, not real. And they were like, what? And he was like, yeah, bro. And they were like, you're fired.
No impression. Gotta kick it, man.
I'm not gonna lie. I don't know if he got fired from Glasgow, but I know he got relieved from the head chair or whatever you call it.
And then in my section two, there's like, where I'm going after Malebranche is this guy named Aristotle.
Who's that? I've never heard of him.
Oh yeah, he's like this like famous like a Greek swole dude. But like
right. But so I wonder if there's a way you could flow that nicely and be like, actually, Malebranche, like my critique of Malebranche is better. Like, you can solve this critique with Aristotle's system. Yeah. Boom. Here's Aristotle's system.
Yeah, and Aristotle just wants to say, like, human good, human...
Flourishing,
yeah. Well, oh, yeah. I'm fine with saying human good. Human good or flourishing can be defined by identifying the function of a human. So as soon as you recognize this function,
this teleology, yeah, what's the purpose?
What's the purpose? Then you can live this life. And he says the human good is
rational. Well, it doesn't just come in recognizing it. It comes in living in accordance with that teleology. Yeah.
It's not just you recognizing. You have to live. It's an active thing.
Yeah.
This is true. All of our episodes in Aristotle cover that, by the way.
If you guys are interested more in Aristotle's ethics, we've done a couple episodes. Mm-hmm. It's on Spotify. So.
But he wants to say the human good is rational activity performed well, so you have to do this excellently, and is in accordance with virtues. And he has these virtues, but then there's unnamed virtues.
Right.
And also, depending on the situation, you might not use that one virtue that you might value. You might use another virtue than the one you think you should use, or something.
Which, like, going back a little bit, some people might have a problem with that performed well aspect. Yeah. To say that I have to have some sort of external manifestation of my goodwill to make me a good person seems a little bit counterintuitive. It seems like, if you take the Kantian perspective, you say, like, if I had the good idea, like if I did the right thing and the outcome went terrible, right? Or not did the right thing. If I had the right intent and, like, the outcome went terrible, it seems like you could still count me as a good person, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know of a good example, but, like, you know, I guess this is kind of a silly example and it's probably not, like, bulletproof, but say I, like, go to buy coffee for someone and I'm, like, walking it to them and I trip and I fall and I, like, spill hot coffee on them. It's like under Aristotle's system, you just, I don't know if you performed a vice, but, like, you definitely didn't perform a virtue. When it seems like you could say, well, yeah, that you did a good thing. It just didn't end up right, and it was an accident, but you're still a good person.
Does he ever directly virtuous. Talk about vices? I can't remember now.
He does say that, to go against the Kantian point, right, is he says it's more of a disposition and character, right? So it's not really about the action itself and the outcomes of the actions. It's about having a disposition to, like, go out of your way and get people coffee, right?
This is because if
Aristotle, the disposition's a character,
right?
And so it count as a virtue, right? If you, like, routinely go out of your way to, like, help people and getting them coffee, right? So even if you spill it on them, they'll still think of you as a good person because you have that disposition to help.
The performing well is you actively, constantly habituating this until where it's, like, just a thing you do.
Exactly.
Like, you don't even think about doing it. You just kind of, like, do it.
I think,
like, brushing your teeth.
Yeah, that's a good point. I was talking to Rob in my conference course this week, and he was saying, like, you don't have to have I always refer to it as, like, external equipment. You don't have to have the external equipment to be virtuous.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have the external equipment to be flourishing. So, like, maybe I was wrong when I said that. Maybe Aristotle could say the person who got coffee for someone and then spilled it on them is virtuous, but they're not flourishing. That seems intuitive, or that seems agreeable.
A lot of times Aristotle doesn't talk about vices. He just say, like, there's a person that's just not living a good life, right?
What do you mean?
Like, I really wasn't listening to what you're saying, but, like, I'm just gonna jump to my point anyways. I zoned out. That's why.
No, I know. Well, I was just saying that. Maybe it seems like I was probably wrong under Aristotle's picture where you say, like, the coffee example. Like, it seems like, because I was talking to Rob and he says, you know, you can be virtuous without flourishing, and the external equipment is necessary for flourishing, not for being virtuous. So you can be virtuous so as long as you have the disposition, you buy the coffee for someone, you spill it on them, you are virtuous, but you're not flourishing. That seems to make sense.
Okay, and this makes sense why I was going to jump to the point. I was going to say something like, yeah, you can do all these virtues, but there's, like, you remember the war example I got caught up on? Lucas, you don't understand, dude. I was so hyper fixated on that war example.
The war example?
The guy who, like, dies in the war and he's, like, considered as not flourishing or not eudaimon.
Because he, like, he had a brutal death or something like that?
Yeah, he had, like, a really bad death.
Yeah, so, like, he had a virtuous life, but he didn't have a flourishing life because this death kind of, like, prevented it.
Oh, because flourishing is defined in terms of teleology. And
Yeah.
Okay. Poor guy. That's rough, bud.
And my conclusion's going to be, actually, there's no such thing as God.
Aristotle has a problem with that.
Yeah, no, it's true. Well, I'm gonna make an atheist Aristotle. I'm gonna be like
a Dawkins Aristotle.
Yeah, I'm gonna make a Dawkins Aristotle. I'm like, actually, there's no such thing as God, and you gotta habituate these virtues, self-help, bootstrap.
Get up at 4 a.m. Yeah. every day.
Yeah, shout out to Ross. I think he likes the Supreme Court or something like that. And that actually, shout out to Ross. But anyways,
what?
Oh, sorry.
No one knows who Ross is.
Yeah, he's a grad student.
Yeah. Okay.
It wasn't a shout-out. He's chill
Supreme
sometimes.
Supreme Court? Ugh.
Yeah.
Well, this got off the rails. We're going to go to break, and then we're going to come back, and we'll talk about my favorite guys. All
right. Yeah, they kind of get weird right there.
This is what you're going to hear is Paradise. Or
yeah, oh, which song did you choose?
Huh?
What song did you choose?
I just told you, Paradise.
Paradise.
No, like, did you pick, like, a... Well, I'll talk about it off air.
Okay. All right, guys. We'll see you on a second.
Paradise by Spinfizz.
Zinnig danst, maar het feest vermijdt. In wat wordt ontkend of alsnog beweerd. Je doet je best, maar het gaat niet meer. In de kleine dood, in het vlammend spel. Oké, je meent het niet, maar ja, je zei het wel. In je ware aard, in de stille tocht van dingen die je droomt en dingen die je zocht. In de glazen bol, in de felle zon, in de statistiek, in de metadon. Als de hemel schreeuwt wie je had kunnen zijn. Je doet je best, maar je doet haar pijn. Als je trilt van angst, als je wacht en wacht in de achterdocht, achter het matte glas, in de stille vloek van je DNA. Oh ja, hoera, voilà. En de machine draait maar door in de metafoor, in het gekkenhuis. Als het water dreigt en stijgt en ruist op de linkerbaan. Alles heeft een prijs, maar ze houdt van jou in het paradijs.
stiekem mini beetje vibe in. Op die psilocybin. Wel nog de controle, maar niet helemaal de leiding. Gestrekt been sliding, deze dagen niet meer mijn ding. Soepel hang gliding. Strijk is Jozef Haydn. Fly high, lig laag. In plain sight is Yusuf Haydn. Zoek de yang van mijn ying. Gebalanceerde timing. Voel me soms Hawaii, ook al no man is an island. Enig kind, ik ben gewend. Al mijn leven lang de gaijin. Niemand. Niemand. Niemand is een eiland. Barzanzi, exotische vakantie. Knauwi LP's, blijven spinnen als Anansi. Koelen als de Fonzie, hart van glas blondie. Koens blijft schiemen, maar ik zet je niet in ponzies. Minister van Defensie, camouflage fancy. Je hoort me wel, maar ziet me niet verstopt onder missensie. Ik ben wie ik ben, zie, allergisch voor pretentie. Net pas mezelf ontdekt, ik was mijn eigen concurrentie. Niemand.
More about Hunt a Killer's Murder Mystery Party Week at thedailytexan.com/mystery.
It's not a phase, Mom!
Fall in love with the worst times of your life all over again.
The Cringe.
Sundays at 5 p.m. hosted by DJ DeChico.
And DJ Deep Space.
Where we embrace all the things we used to hide.
Fandoms.
Twilight.
Minecraft.
Creepypasta.
Anime.
Angsty poetry.
Warrior Cats.
Only on KVRX 91.7 FM.
Yeah, we're back, dude. We're back.
Yeah, no. You're good. We're back, guys.
We got DJ
Trish.
Trish McGish. Trigonometry and
See eggs out of it.
Yeah, so you just hit clear on this. It's philosophy, we think. DJ Geist, just do like a little recap of our show so far.
Oh yeah, bro. This is DJ Geist here. Pretend. The world spirit pushing this show forward. And quick recap, we just covered my paper topic, which is on Malebranche, this French dude that's Catholic.
Oh yeah.
And then Aristotle, who's this Greek philosopher, and Malebranche just thinks to live a moral life is to be in accordance with these perfections. And if you're in accordance with these perfections, God, since he's just, grants you this happiness. And this necessarily happens. Aristotle, he just thinks, you know, humans have a purpose or function. And once we figure out this purpose or function and we can get at what is good, and he just thinks that this function is like rational activity performed well in accordance with the virtues.
That sounds good to me.
Yeah,
that was a great recap and just in time. Okay, so now we're gonna talk about my paper.
DJ De Morgan's Jump, he does like logical stuff.
Yeah, but not this time.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go step out of the room and toot real quick because I got one in there,
dude. Turn off all the mics, dude. Keep it in here. Come back. He didn't fart in the booth, boys.
Was that virtuous?
No. It wasn't the correct habituation.
Was that the wrong habituation?
I don't think you're flourishing. Your stomach's flourishing. Either.
My stomach's not flourishing.
You're not virtuous
dude.
Or flourishing.
I had an elk
How'd
burger.
You mess up on both?
I had an elk burger earlier, dude. That boy tore
Oh,
me.
I was with you when you bought that, dude.
Yeah. Okay, anyway.
He shot an elk, by the way. He didn't buy it.
No,
he's a manly Jordan Peterson man.
Yeah. I tore that thing up with my hands, dude.
Yeah. He cries.
Anyways.
He cries every time he talks about something. I had to kill it. Okay.
Have you ever had to kill a elk with your bare hands?
Not enough Nazi dog whistles.
You can't understand what it's like to kill an elk with your bare hands. You don't know
what it's like to take something's life.
Okay, anyways. So I'm writing over self-love, the concept of self-love and self-interest in Hume, Hume's ethics. So Hobbes. I don't know. Malebranche too, maybe. But Hobbes has this idea of like psychological egoism, which is just that all of our actions, especially our moral determinations, are motivated and explained by selfish intentions or like
mm-hmm. projection.
self-love. But the point being, like, everything that I do is for my own interest. It's for my own gain, and that's what I guess. Well, maybe not. Anyways, that's what I consider when making a moral decision or when making a decision. So Hume comes along and he says, "No, that can't be right. Like, there's a lot of cases where we can see people sacrificing self-interest, or we can see like instances of virtuous applause where there's no interest involved, right?" So there must be something else that explains this concept, that explains these decisions, that explains this moral approbation or applause for other people, and one of these could be benevolence, like a sort of like built-in benevolence.
Mm-hmm.
And we should say Hume's project is like not rationalist at all.
Like, oh,
it's
no,
the
it's
opposite
like,
of rationalism.
It's like,
well,
like,
maybe not. Okay, it's not anti-rationalism in the sense that he's like,
yeah,
he's like, reason can get us at some stuff, but it's not.
But he's the first hardcore skeptic.
Yeah, for sure. So what he's gonna say is like, really, it's what we need to do is observe and do this sort of like Newtonian project. Look at a bunch of particular instances, collect data, and then derive some sort of like general rule. So Hume.
Yeah, and also the general rule is like a causal force, but it's not the defining causal force.
Yeah, it's not the, so it's like the causal force that we can give to it with our limited view of the mind. Like, it's basically like saying, here's the rule for us as humans, because it's the best that we can do. Mm. But because we also know that we're limited, we know that it's not the explanatory thing.
Yeah. Like, we don't know what, or I don't know, maybe we do now, but we don't know what causes gravity. But we know that gravity causes the apple to fall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We know that, like, we use the concept of gravity because it is something that mostly explains the apple falling, but
it's explanatory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To us. But we can't fully grasp what exactly is causing gravity because we have a limitation that is the human mind. Anyways, the point being, I'm going a little too deep here into like Hume's project in general. My point is his concept of benevolence. So Hume comes along and he's critiquing Hobbes' idea of psychological egoism, where Hobbes is like, no, everything's motivated by self-interest, and Hume's like, no, this seems to be like a universal sympathy. And this universal sympathy is written into like human nature, which is not what you would think of as general human nature. It's more like human nature as in like, this is what Hume has observed in the majority of humans, and that seems, we can call that human nature.
State of, what is it called again?
State of Nature?
State of Nature. I always call it the State of War for some reason.
So to summarize, Hobbs is a huge Andrew Tate fan. Super masculine, right? He's like, oh, everything is just on my grind, escape the Matrix, you know, all that other BS. And then, Hume comes along, yeah. right? And he's also, like, hyper-masculine, whatever, but he takes some shrooms. Yeah. And taking shrooms, he discovers this magical thing called empathy.
Yep, yep.
Radical.
Or sympathy. Yeah. Oh, I guess empathy is more apt, right?
Yeah, in our context. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So, basically, congrats, masculine guy discovers empathy. Humes did a lot of shrooms to come to that realization, but it got him there.
Yeah. Or he just out of the lived with the French. And he was like, whoa, y'all know what love is, son. I'm feeling some simp.
Yeah.
Sympathy. Anyways, he's like, ah, never mind. That's too edgy. Turn off the hit KVRX on the. No.
Hold on. Audition.
I got it. Okay, this is just for Spotify. He's like, damn, them babes with them French pits. Let me tell you something, son. All right, guys.
Okay, back.
Okay, sorry about that,
little
guys.
Disruption there on the airwaves.
I don't know what's going on. Technical difficulty.
Wait, did they hear?
Just Spotify.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, because we turned off KBRS.
Yeah, that'll just, yeah. So, anyways, where were we at? Oh, yeah. So, he's got this idea of universal sympathy, and he's like, yeah, everybody has a universal disposition to feel the passions or the sentiments of what other people are feeling. And this is like, sure, it may sound like a little abstract, but like it makes super sense. Like if I watch,
Oh, that Instagram video.
Yeah, I was about to say, me and DJ Geist were watching an Instagram video earlier, and we saw a girl like just rail her head into a
she was like doing like a monkey bars thing.
Yeah.
And she hopped off and ran, and she was obviously too tall because she's like maybe grown or a teenager.
Yeah.
And she just hits her head like on a bar.
Yeah, just wrecked. Yeah. And we both cringed. And it's this like cringe, this like ability of us to identify with that pain or pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
Not in that instance, but in general, that is this universal sympathy for Hume. And he says that we also have a sort of like universal or everybody has benevolence, which is just like a goodwill towards others. So the exact opposite of what Hobbes is saying. But he doesn't deny that self-interest can motivate us. So Hume's like, yeah, sure. I'll give you your point, Hobbes, that like some things are self-motivated or like self-motivated by self-interest. That's what I'm trying to say. And it doesn't mean that everything is motivated by self-interest. So there's instances in which he gives examples. A couple of examples that he gives is like the mother with her sick child. Like the mother takes care of her sick child even though she knows it's going to make her sick, even though she knows that like it's not in her best interest to stay up late and like wake up every like couple hours or like whatever. But she still does it. Because of this, like, benevolence, this goodwill towards her own child, right? And then another example is this idea of the disinterested observer, I think.
Yeah, that's how she always phrases it.
Yeah, okay. So
not her. Who says that? Oh, Engel was saying that.
Okay. So the disinterested observer, where you say, like, take me, DJ DeMorgan, sitting here in 2023, tell me a story about, like, I don't know, someone 800 years ago who, like, gave a lot of money to poor people. I don't know. And I'm like, yeah, that's a commendable action. Like, they did a good thing. And I, like, morally applaud them. Under Hobbes's picture, why am I morally applauding them? Why am I interested in them if there's no benefit to me? I don't get anything back from person X 800 years ago doing something positive.
Yeah. Or like you're watching the news and some woman saves a kid from getting hit by a car and you're like, right.
Well, I think Hobbes could explain that and say like this is good for our society.
Okay.
And maybe. Our society is good for me.
That's Hobbs weird. Had mommy issues. I don't trust him.
It was all about the phallus, man.
But the point being, Hume gives these examples of the disinterested observer. He gives the example of the mother and the sick child. Mm-hmm. I can't remember if the child was sick. Maybe it was just a child. But
maybe it was
he also
sick
gives the example
and a child that was sick and a child.
A child?
Yeah.
Sick?
Is there a child in this story?
That's sick and a child. And the child is sick.
It's sick.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I got it. I'm following.
We should get tacos at Moxie's after this.
You want? Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah.
I'm down for some tacos.
That was a little random.
Ramble, yeah.
But,
yeah.
But.
And pineapple juice.
What?
Pineapple juice, remember?
Do you think Hobbs drank pineapple juice?
All right. Go.
Ask his wife.
Ask his wife? Oh, God, bro.
Anyways. What was I saying?
I don't know.
Okay.
About the child. You talking about the...
Yeah. So you've got these examples. Also, in the appendices, Hume just says, like, it just makes sense. You take this example of, like... my girlfriend liked that joke.
Oh.
Anyways, so you take this example of, like, a benevolent action. It's just... It's immediately benevolent. Yeah. And Hobbes may try to... So the point being... Hobbes may try to explain this away and say, like, imagine the mother with the sick child, right? She is defining in her own self-love, her own way, that it is good for her that her child does well.
Yeah.
So in a way, she's acting in her own self-love. In the same way, if you take the person who gives to charity for the general interest of society, like, that person is defining their self-love that what is good for them with what is good for the society.
Mm-hmm.
And you can give like a reciprocal relationship because they know that what's good for, or they know subconsciously in some sense, that's what's good for the society is good for them. Mm-hmm. And this gets into justice. And if hopefully you guys listened to our last episode, unfortunately we didn't get it recorded,
but really
we talked about that of like why humans who are naturally selfish would enter into these like sort of justice or these sort of relationships of necessary justice and things like that to get out of the state of nature under the Humean perspective.
Yeah.
But at this point, Hobbes is trying to explain away the mother and the child.
Yeah.
You're defining that the charitable person.
Yeah.
And then you say like maybe we take the indifferent observer and you say, what do they get back there? How do you square this? And Hobbes might say something like. And again, this is my sort of like outline for my paper. So this is sort of like a sketched response. Hobbes might say something like, "Well, it's not that particular action that you're interested in. It's the general rule that it represents. I'm interested in someone 800 years ago giving to poor people because I know that giving to poor people in my society would be a good thing." For me,
mm-hmm.
because if I give, you know, then if poor people become richer or like whatever, or if they're sustained,
well,
then like we can support each other and whatever, right?
It's useful to.
Exactly. It's useful to society, and what's useful to the society is useful to my preservation or like to my.
And it's agreeable too, I imagine.
Exactly.
Does it cross both categories?
I don't know.
Yeah.
But the point being.
It's definitely useful. That's all
so,
that matters.
Okay, now we've got a way that, like, maybe he can square this picture, Hobbes. And then my conclusion is I want to say, like, no, like, actually, I want to give, like, a response of my own for Hume and say, like, no, like, you can try and square these ideas, these examples under the picture of self-love, but it doesn't really work out because... And what we were talking about at Juiceland just before this, and this is where we're really getting into the like theoretical like first level stuff that I haven't really fully thought through yet. But I think there may be something like, you look at the person who gives the charity and you say that they're self-interested because what's good for the society is good for them and they're interested in what's good for them. And then you look at the person who is immediately self-interested, right? They're like looking to like, they are the truly self-interested person.
Yeah.
These are two different things. And I think it's, so what we were talking about is something like, the person who chooses to give to charity is so distinctly different that it's not the individual interest. It's apparent that it's not the individual interest that is grounding the decision making there. So sure, self-interest or self-love may be served in that sense.
Yeah.
Because I give to the society and the society gives back to me. But that isn't, it's not that self-love or that self-interest that grounds the thing. And in that sense, the self-interest is sort of secondary and not even really a voluntary action in some sense. It's my decision to charitably give to the society that we should enter into our moral determination, not what I receive back from it. And so in that sense, it's benevolence sort of like has to explain this, because it's like, no, you don't need to explain the self-interested things that you, or the self-loving things that you received back from the society. Mm-hmm. What you need to explain is why this person would
has
this do this in the first place.
That's the morally
judgmental thing, right? And that's sort of where I'm at with the paper.
Yeah, you're way farther along than me.
I mean, I kind of just got there today.
Oh.
Same. I don't know what I'm arguing. It's all Oedipal complex.
Oedipal complex?
Oedipal.
Oh, Oedipal.
Psychoanalysis. You can come.
Oh. That was sarcasm. Freud's bad. Almost as bad as Hobbes.
Yeah, I definitely do, dude. He did sign language.
Okay, guys. This was a good show. We were a little all over the place. I'm a little tired. We had a long week trying to put this show together, honestly.
Yeah.
But I thought it went well. What do you think?
We talked about our topics.
Yeah.
Thoroughly. We could.
We're just kind of brainstorming still, so.
Yeah.
All right, guys. We will see y'all next Friday with a guest. Grad student guest, so it should be a good episode.
Our second grad student guest.
Yep. All right, guys. Love y'all very much. Y'all have a great night.
I don't know if I love y'all, but Pete,
I love y'all.
Yeah.
You're listening to KBRX.
I'm the world spirit. I don't know.